the drive to create things. You're a writer, a photographer, a musician, a maker. You're ready to make things happen.
But chasing creative isn't always easy. Your time and energy go to your work, your family, and your life. Is it really possible to make space for the creative in your everyday?
Here at the Chasing Creative Podcast, we believe you can. We're everyday creatives who have insights and action steps you can take today to make your creative plans happen.
I'm Ashley Brooks, a freelance writer and editor at Brooks Editorial and a work-at-home mom of two. I would love to devote more time to creative writing, journaling, and blogging.
And I'm Abigail Creeves, a writer and photographer behind Inkwells and Images. I'm also a work-at-home mom who is just beginning to learn the ropes of balancing a baby and everything else.
And you are listening to the Chasing Creative Podcast.
Welcome back to episode 7 of season 4 here on Chasing Creative. Today, Ashley and I are chatting all about creative challenges. And by challenges, we kind of mean those things you do to challenge yourself to do something different or something every day for 100 days. So we're talking things like NaNoWriMo, which is National Novel Writing Month, or the 100 Days Project with Elle Luna, and she's the author of The Crossword of Should and Must. The same as like 31 days where you blog every single day of the month of October, those kind of things. So what kind of creative challenges have you participated in, Ashley?
Yeah, so I've done quite a few of these challenges that are designed to stretch your creative muscles. NaNoWriMo, which like you said is National Novel Writing Month, is the first one I ever participated in. And I did that mostly back in high school. I started when I was 13 or 14, I think I did my first one. And that went pretty well because I was in high school and I had no outside obligations and no bills to pay and, you know, all those sorts of things that make for a conducive writing life. So this is the first time I'm trying since I've had like an adult's life, like responsibilities. I'm giving it another shot this year. And as we're recording this, we are just about halfway through November, and I am going to admit I have not written a single word yet. The goal is 50,000 words in 30 days. So yeah. I am well behind. But what I have ended up doing this year, part of that was because I got sick. So then I fell behind on client work and I had to catch up on that. So what I have been doing this year is I've been taking the time to actually outline what I want my novel to look like, which I have never done before. And it's actually gotten me really excited about the writing process again. So now instead of actually writing a novel in 30 days, I'm going to try to outline my full novel and get it pretty well fleshed out so that when I sit down to do the writing in December and beyond, all the bare bones are already there for me to work off of. So it's working out even though I'm doing it completely wrong.
Hey, that is a fabulous idea. I like that you're just taking it and making it your own. So I have done NaNoWriMo as well a couple of times, but they've all been since graduating college and having an adult life. And so I've never actually won NaNoWriMo, which is what you call it when you actually do write 50,000 words. I got really, really close one year. I wrote like 47,000 and some. So I almost won, but I didn't quite get there. I think it's you have to write 1,667 words a day. So it's not too prohibitive if you stay on top of it.
Yes, that's what most people do.
Yes, but if you get like 3 days behind, then you need to write like 6,000 words in order to catch up, and that's a little more daunting to do.
Yeah, it's really tough to keep up with NaNoWriMo in a real adult's life kind of setting. So, but that is the point of a creative challenge, is to stretch yourself and push yourself. And really, I think NaNoWriMo just wants to encourage you to create a daily writing habit. So there's definitely some good that comes out of it there. And then another one that both of us have done, I think, is 100 days. You've done that one before, right?
I did. I tried to do it this year. I didn't win or finish or whatever you would call it for the 100 days either. I started doing 100 days of noticing is what I called it, because I had just got laid off of my job and was about to have a baby and life was just in chaos, and decided that like I needed to have some kind of practice that really helped ground me and help me like notice things, the good things, and really kind of mark those for the season that I was in. And I found it really helpful. I think I only ever made it to like 47 out of 100. And those were definitely not consecutive days in there, but it was still kind of a good thing to have in the background as we were kind of wading through that newborn season of like, yep, there are good things about all of these days and I need to take note. So 100 days was good for that. It didn't, I don't think, stretch me creatively or anything like that, but it really was something that I needed to participate in at that moment for that completely, you know, unbusiness related reason.
Yeah. And I did 100 days for the first time this year as well. And my goal was to write one line of fiction each day, totally unrelated to every other day. So just like one line of, it could be dialogue, it could be setting, whatever. It didn't have to be at all interconnected with the other days. And I only got through 25 days, some of which I was even doubling up to catch up on. So I really technically did not do very good at this. But the thing I like about the 100 Days Challenge is that there is such a big community, especially on Instagram. If you follow that mm-hmm. hashtag of other creators doing that sort of thing. And then it's also so open-ended. So it's a good way for people to dive in if they're trying to either establish a habit or try something new that they're not sure they're going to like. I just really like that you can sort of choose your own adventure with that one. So it's sort of a nice way to dive into a creative project that you're maybe not sure about.
Yeah, I like that, the choose your own adventure aspect to 100 days. You can make it your own. My problem is I always find out about creative challenges after they've already started.
Yeah.
And I never feel like I can dive in a day or two late. And maybe that's just like the very rigid chronological part of me that gets irritated about that kind of thing. But I like, this was the first year that I knew about 100 days before it started. So I was able to kind of jump on board somewhat ahead of time. And I find the same thing with like NaNoWriMo. Like the first year I participated was the first year I knew before November 1 had already passed. And I was able to actually like get set up and mentally kind of prepare to do it. I think that's part of the problem, is like mentally clearing your schedule for the next 30 days.
Yes, that is true. I think I heard about the 100 Days Project for the first time when we interviewed Rachel Dawson, actually. So we can link back mm-hmm. to her podcast episode because we talk about it a little bit there. She actually completes her projects, unlike us, even when she's struggling through them. So her episode might be a good one to listen to. if anybody wants some encouragement from people who aren't slackers like us.
Yeah. And another person who's really rocks the 100 Days Challenge is Elise Blaha Crepy. She last year did 100 Days of Pep Talks, and this year she did 100 Days of Plants on Fabric, and then made an enormous quilt out of all of like the little blocks of plants that she had in some way either like stitched or stamped or screen printed onto fabric. And that was pretty cool to watch. But she's one of those people who, I mean, as we've talked about goal setting with her before, she like makes a goal and she sticks to it. And it's really inspiring to watch her kind of go through 100 days of anything.
Yeah. And she is creative in such a different way than I am. She's very crafty creative, which is yes. the total opposite of me. Like, I don't do very much hands-on creativity at all. So I'm always just in awe of the things that she makes out of seemingly nothing.
Yes. And like you said, it's a completely different way of being creative as opposed to writing a novel, which takes so long. And in the end, like, all you have to really like show people are a bunch of words on a stack of paper. It's much more fun to see someone like paint something or draw something. It's a little more Instagram worthy, maybe.
Very true.
Yeah. Have you ever participated in any other kind of creative challenge?
Yeah. So another one that I wanted to mention is the 2030 Make Challenge, which is hosted by Jenny Moratis, which is one of our long ago podcast guests. She came on and talked to us a little bit about her creative retreats, so we'll link to her episode as well. But she hosts this challenge called 2030 Make, and you spend 20 minutes a day for 30 days doing something creative. It doesn't have to be the same thing every day. It doesn't have to be some big You know, like a novel was a pretty big project. It doesn't have to be anything grand like that. It can just be whatever you want. And you can start anytime because it's an email list she has set up. So you can sign up anytime you feel like starting, and you'll start getting her emails to your inbox, which is kind of nice because then you don't have, like you said, you find out about these challenges after they've already started. Mm-hmm. That's not a problem with this one. You start it whenever you feel like you're ready. So I did that challenge last spring, and I actually finished all 30 days. And I had a few goals in mind because I had some creative projects that were sort of just sitting in the corner, not getting finished, that I needed to work on. So I used that challenge to force myself to wrap up some of those loose ends before Reagan was born. When I say I did that last spring, I mean I did that spring 2016. So like a year ago spring, I realized that was confusing. So my goals with that one were to finish Hadley's baby album, which I still did not do. I found other creative projects to work on instead. And then I knit Reagan's baby blanket, which I actually did finish. So it was just kind of a nice structure and a good reminder, especially for people who think that they don't have time to be creative. It's a lot easier to find 20 minutes than you think it is, and you can get a lot more done in 20 minutes than you think you can. So that is a good challenge for somebody who's maybe still stuck trying to find time for their passion projects.
No, that is a really good idea. I know Arthur's baby book is sitting on the bookshelf in our dining room, and I keep looking at it every time I walk by, which I do like 80 times a day, and keep thinking like, oh yeah, I should probably open that and write just one thing in it. Like, I've not even written his name in his baby book, and he's 6 months old already. He'll be 7 months next week. That's crazy. But yeah, maybe just like 20 minutes every evening before bed, or 20 minutes every morning while I drink my coffee. That would probably make some progress on a baby book before he's not a baby anymore.
Yeah, although I still technically am not done with Hadley's baby book, because I kept trying to do these like fancy scrapbooks. And then I tried to do like fancy memory keeping, where I was like writing down the one line a day or whatever. And I was like, this is just, none of these things are for me with like the number of children I plan on having. This is not sustainable. And I can't do a really great book for the first kid and then like nothing for the subsequent children. So I just, like, totally old school, I just printed off like actual 4x6 pictures and put them into an actual album, and I'm calling it good. So technically I'm still adding to it because there's still space in the book, but I'm just calling it done. I'm not even writing on the back of the photos. Like, it's fine. It's good enough.
Yeah. You will have at least photos in a book, child. That's all I can give you.
Yes.
On a side note, kind of a tangent from what we're talking about, but Coffee and Crumbs just did a really great podcast episode on creative memory keeping and what everyone at Coffee and Crumbs does to kind of like, whether it's a baby book or photo albums or videos or whatever. And it was really interesting to hear everyone's take on what they do or what they prioritize. And I know that they said in the show notes they were going to share a lot of the things that they have purchased, whether it's photo albums or like Shutterfly books or whatever, with photos, so people could kind of see what those look like. So maybe we'll link to that as well, in case anyone like us is trying desperately to finish a baby book and needs some good inspiration.
Yes, that was a great episode. And that actually also reminded me of another, it's not technically a creative challenge, but I guess it could be. It's another one that Elise Blaha-Kripe shared with us when she was here on the podcast. I think it was called the Second Every Day app, or the 1 Second Every Day app.
Yes, and it's 1 second where every day.
You take a 1 second, I mean, you can take the video longer than that, but you take a video every day and you put it in this app and clip out just 1 second of it. And at the end of the year, you've got like 4 minutes or something of, I can't remember if it's actually 4 minutes. I can't do math like that, but you've got like a couple minutes and of video footage of like your family. And it's not just like those moments that you think you'd videotape, like your kids' Christmas pageant or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, it's actually like real time moments from your family. And it's just kind of a cool idea. I've seen finished ones from people online, and I think that's a really neat thing that would probably be worth doing, is like just taking a short video every day. That could be a creative challenge for somebody who's interested in memory keeping.
Yeah, I like that idea too. And like Elise had said, it's really just marking kind of the year. You can go back and see your family in action throughout the year and not have to spend hours going through all of the individual videos on your phone to take a look. You can kind of compile them into one. So I thought that was a cool idea as well. I was going to say, otherwise, I've done one other creative challenge, and that was the 30 Days of Hustle, which was hosted by John Acuff. Do I say his name right? Is it Acuff?
I think it is, yes.
Okay, good. We really need to look up people's names before I get on this podcast. And this was quite a few years ago. I'm thinking in 2013, maybe, is when I did that. And his 30 Days of Hustle, it might even still happen. I don't know. I'm out of touch. But it was kind of just 30 days to pick any project, whatever you wanted to be, whether it was like building a business or something, and kind of working through some prompts about like, what are you going to do and why are you going to do it and who is going to keep you accountable? And so it was almost like a little like goal setting boot camp. And that was really kind of when I started writing online, even. It really helped me pull together a website and kind of have a purpose for that, all in a 30-day time span. And there was a really great online community too of other writers and people who are participating in that that I really tapped into and enjoyed kind of when I first started hopping online for real, and trying to kind of make a go of being a writer and having a blog and that sort of thing. So I remember that really fondly.
Yeah, that's good. I actually had not ever heard of that challenge, but I can see that being really inspiring, especially for something that's maybe more technical, like, oh, I want to set up this website or this blog because it's an outlet for my creativity. But the thought of actually doing that is so daunting that having a little bit of structure pushing you forward could definitely be helpful.
It definitely was. So it was kind of the first time I've done a creative challenge. And I don't even know if I finished all 30 days, but it was something that like really actually impacted real life too, because here I am 3-4 years later still writing on the internet and still kind of doing some of the things that 30 days of hustle kind of set me up to be doing. And so that's kind of nice to think back on.
And then the only other creative challenge I can think of that's, we might be missing a bunch, but the other one I'm thinking of that's really popular in the blogging world is the 31 days of blogging, which is every October. And that was started by The Nester, Michael and Smith, and now it's hosted by Crystal Stein. And the goal there is just to choose a topic and write every single day, publish a new blog post for the month of October. So that's, again, it's definitely geared towards bloggers, but you can have any sort of blog and make this challenge fit into what you feel like working on. So, I mean, your blog could be about art or different types of creativity, and you could still, you know, format this challenge in a way that fits with what you do. But I have never done this before because that's just, it's not one that speaks to me. I think it's one that would make me feel more pressured and wouldn't necessarily lead to good things. But I know that it's been very helpful to a lot of other bloggers who are maybe a little bit gun shy about hitting publish. It's a good way for them to just, like, if you're publishing that much stuff, you get really used to putting your work out there and you don't have time to make it perfect. And like we said in our sharing your work episode, you just get used to putting yourself out there in front of people. So it could be good for that situation for sure.
No, absolutely. 31 days in a row has always felt really daunting to me. Like, I can't manage to blog once a week these days. So it's certainly not going to happen 31 days in a row. So what do you like or not like about any of the challenges you've ever participated in, or challenges in general?
So my big problem with challenges is that if I miss a day, like I told you, I missed some days in the 100 days challenge last year. I mean, obviously I missed a bunch of days because I only got to 25, but I missed days here and there, even within those 25. Yeah. When I
and
went
we're
back
not
to
math
it,
majors. But yes. 25 is a lot less than 100.
It is. It is indeed. So I ended up, every time I would pick back up, I would try to catch up on however many days I'd missed. So sometimes instead of writing one line of fiction, I'd be trying to write 4 or 5 or 6 lines of fiction. Mm-hmm. And I think it made it more daunting for me, because then the next day I'd be like, oh, I don't want to do that. I just did 6 lines of fiction yesterday, and I would have been better off just pushing through and being like, oops, I missed a couple days. That's okay. I'll keep going. Instead, I feel all this pressure to catch up, which makes it worse.
Mm-hmm. I completely identify with that. And I am definitely a people pleaser. And so if I fall short, quote unquote, I'm air quoting this, I feel really guilty about not completing whatever challenge I'm participating in, even though nobody else is going to call me out on it. Like, no one on the internet is probably even noticing or caring, but I feel really bad about myself if I say I'm going to blog for 31 days and only make it to day 3.
Yeah, I totally agree with that feeling. And sometimes this hasn't really happened to me so far, but if I were one of the people, and I don't usually do this, but if I were somebody who shared my creative challenge work every day on Instagram or Twitter using a hashtag or like updating my NaNoWriMo word count every day, which is not something I do, I think I would eventually start to feel resentful of the time that it took me to update the world about how I was doing. I would be like, well, it's none of your business. It's like, I'm doing this for me. I'm not doing this for you. But that social media aspect is where you find a lot of the community and a lot of that support and accountability that comes from the challenge. So I don't know, maybe I'm just not built for that sort of thing. Maybe my personality just rebels against it.
That is possible. So yeah, that's what I've always not liked about creative challenges, other than the fact that I always find out about them too late. But I always find that the one like really good thing about creative challenges is the communities, like you said. And if you're not sharing online, you kind of miss out on getting to be part of those. Mm-hmm. And I feel like even if I don't meet new people during the creative challenges, I do tend to learn a lot more about the people I already do know who are participating. Like I found Lindsay Crandall's 100 days series this last year, 100 days of Yes, You Can. And it was kind mm-hmm. of little pep talks that she gave herself, but she like really dove deep and wrote. It wasn't just like, yes, you can do this. It was like paragraphs of motivation and how she was feeling. And it was really, really good to see someone kind of that intensely thinking through life at that moment. And you could really tell she was putting a lot of effort into it. And I found that really, really fascinating.
Yeah, I think I like watching other people's creative challenges more than I like sharing my own. I'm not sure why that is, but I agree. It's been really fascinating to see what other people do. Or like I see somebody posting every day on Instagram about their 100 days project. I'm like, oh, good for them. Like they're doing really well. And Lindsay Crandall, like you said, her Instagram captions are so amazing. They could be a book. Like if you're not following her on Instagram, you need to be. And then you need to always click more and read her whole caption because they are so good.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. So yeah, I think the kind of motivation and excitement of all of those projects is really kind of where the fun lies. I don't know if you have the same feeling.
Yeah, I can see that. I think I get a lot more out of like choosing a creative project because it fits something I need in my life. So choosing those creative challenges that push me forward towards my goals, I think that's where I get excited about them. But I do like having that community of other people, even though like right now with the NaNoWriMo community, I'm not engaging with them at all because like I've written 0 words. I don't need any more distraction from my novel by talking to people in the forums or in Facebook groups or anything like that. But just knowing that so many other people around the world are participating in this same thing right now is kind of cool.
Yeah, definitely the community aspect can be more of a distraction than it can be a help sometimes. So that's good on you to recognize that and not even like wade into the temptation of the forums where you can get lost for hours instead of writing a word.
Yes, this is very true.
And I do like how you said you are bending NaNoWriMo rules this year to fit your situation. You haven't written a word, but you have started outlining, which is something you maybe or probably would never have done had you not thought about participating in NaNoWriMo anyway. So do you often bend the rules to fit kind of your creative situation?
Yeah, with pretty much everything. Like I can't think of another creative challenge situation right offhand, but I definitely take guidelines or rules and throw out what doesn't make sense for me or what won't work for my personality and keep what will work for me and add other stuff that I think I might want thrown in there. I do stuff like that all the time. How about you? Have you ever bent the rules on a creative challenge?
No, because I am a rule follower and I don't know what it is in my personality type that just has to follow the rules. But I really, like, 99% of the time I have to follow the rules. So I feel very incapable of, like, taking something and changing it to fit what I want or what I need. But like I said before, there's literally no one on the internet who is ever going to yell at me for changing things. It's not like I'm going to get a ticket for changing the rules of NaNoWriMo to fit my situation. So I really should just get over it and start learning to bend the rules when I need to. Maybe I'll get better at that.
Yes. Do you have any tips for making the most of a creative challenge?
I guess my one tip would be to, prepare yourself ahead of time. If you have the opportunity, if you know about the challenge ahead of time, if you're going to do something like NaNoWriMo, don't plan 3 weekends away in the month of November because you're just going to sabotage yourself before it even begins. Mm-hmm. Don't say yes to dinner dates and getting together with people or, participating in that 5K. If what you really, your actual real goal is to write 50,000 words, like, make that your priority and kind of clear your schedule as much as you can. And really just, do everything, set yourself up for success, I guess. Clean your house before November 1st arrives so that you can't procrastinate on writing because, I'll just clean the house first, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, like get all that extra stuff out of your way, meal plan for the whole month and then plan to have groceries delivered, like all of our usual mm-hmm. hacks for getting rid of the housework and various chores, pile those all up on top of each other so you can take all your house cleaning time and devote it towards whatever creative challenge you're working on.
I remember reading a blogger several years ago about doing like a no spend month, which is where you try to spend as little money as possible for an entire month or like a set amount of money that you've decided. And she's like, and obviously we do this and we set ourselves up for success. Before the first of that month rolls around, we fill up our cars with gasoline and we make sure we have at least a few groceries in the house and that kind of thing. And that always just really stuck with me. Like, obviously don't challenge yourself to do something knowing that you're going to fail, I think is also a big point. Like, if you know that there is absolutely no chance under any sun that you are going to write 50,000 words in November, like maybe don't put that pressure on yourself and kind of figure out a different way to challenge yourself that is actually achievable.
Yes, for sure. That's where adjusting your goals and see, you can bend the rules, like set a goal that's actually achievable. That's perfect. That's exactly what I do. I could achieve writing an outline when 0 words. So that's what I did.
Well, good for you, Ashley. And then one other thing, like we've talked about before, is make sure the people around you know what you want to do and not like actually share what you're going to be doing so that they can help you and not hinder you. I don't know if you've ever tried to do a creative challenge without telling anyone and everyone around you just keeps getting in the way and you get mad at them, but you can't really fault them for it because you never told them what you wanted to do.
Yeah, that's true. And that actually happened the first few times I was doing NaNo when I was younger, because I like didn't know how to explain to my parents like, oh, yeah, I'm trying to write a book, like it sounds kind of weird or stupid. So they just were like, why are you on the computer all the time? Like, you never used to be on the computer all the time. Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's kind of all the tips and tricks and things we have about creative challenges. Anything else you wanted to add before we move into mini book club?
No, I don't think so. It just seemed like the right time of year to, I don't know, encourage people, if you've got any extra time at the end of the year or big goals coming up in January, a creative challenge might be just what you need to help you make that next step.
There's nothing to be said for waiting until January 1st to start something new. So if you feel like you've got a little bit of extra creative energy here towards the end of the year, I say get it all out and make some kind of creative goal for yourself to finish up in the next few weeks.
And with that, what have you been reading lately, Abby?
Okay. I have been reading, I've just been kind of diving into any kind of fiction ebook that I can get my hands on. Like I've said before, reading ebooks these days is much, much easier than paper books. So I have a huge stack of paper books that I really want to be reading, but I just know it's never going to happen. So I've kind of settled for things that I can check out from the library on ebook. And one of those was From Sand and Ash by Amy Harmon, who apparently has written a lot of books and I've never heard of her, so I'm maybe a little bit outside of the normal fan base of hers. But it was a book that was set in World War II in Italy, and I am a sucker for historical fiction of all kinds, especially the war era historical fiction. But I've never, I don't think, actually read a book set in Italy during that time period, so it was kind of neat to see that perspective from characters that I've never seen before. And I thought this book was unique in the fact that it's from the perspective of an Italian Jewish girl. And then the other main character is someone who was raised kind of like a sibling to her. They were raised in the same household, but they're not technically related. And he is actually a Catholic priest once he grows up. And so kind of the interplays between their two faiths and their two families was really, really interesting to me. And it's fiction, and it's like a, I can say it's probably a romance in some way, shape, or form. So it completely ends exactly how you expect it to. In order for it to be a good book, it would have to end exactly this way. But it's really very well done from beginning to end. It's well written and pretty enjoyable. I think I ended up giving it like 3 stars on Goodreads. It's nothing that I'm going to be like, yes, you have to read this, like All the Light We Cannot See, but it's perfectly acceptable World War II historical fiction.
That sounds really interesting. I have never heard of that one before, but I really like the thought of like the interplay between the different faiths and sort of the different, like at some point, all the historical World War II novels kind of sound similar. And this just seems like it has a different angle on it. So that is intriguing to me. Like I'm just interested in like the whole premise of that book.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so often we focus our attentions in World War II on Germany. Obviously, that's kind of the seat of where most of the action takes place. But I kind of forgot that alongside Germany, you know, Italy also, you know, kind of drove out their Jewish population and really kind of followed in step along with what Hitler did in Germany. And that was kind of a good reminder. And it was also really interesting kind of seeing the two faiths interplay. So the Catholic priest and the Jewish girl, and the little differences, but also the similarities that, you know, people in that kind of a situation who have faith at all kind of fall into the same line of thinking in a lot of ways. And the one line that really, really stuck with me throughout the novel is the young girl, when she's quite young, I'd say probably 12 or 13, she asks her grandfather, what's a mitzvah? Like, she doesn't really understand what it is. And he tells her it's something, it's a holy act or a tradition that elevates the mundane to the divine. And I thought that was just a beautiful way of looking at it. I am not Jewish. I have no Jewish background whatsoever. But just kind of that little look into the world, something that elevates the mundane to the divine, I think is a lot of what we try to do even as writers and as creative people. And that line will stick with me for a very long time.
Yeah, that makes me think of so many of the books we recommend and we read here and talk about on Mini Book Club that are all about how our ordinary lives do matter. And there is creativity and there are those threads of the sacred woven into our everyday. So yeah, I really like that. This just sounds like the kind of book with like background themes, I guess, maybe not even background themes, but just a perspective that I would really appreciate and enjoy, something that's kind of missing from a lot of literature these days. So
yeah,
very good.
So it's definitely a love story. And if you don't mind those, then dive in. It's well worth a read.
Awesome.
So what about you? You have once again bested me and read nonfiction. I just need to check out a nonfiction book.
Okay, reading nonfiction does not mean that I have bested you. Just means that I need to read more fiction.
I just think it makes you sound way more intelligent these days, but I will let you claim that one for right now.
Well, this is, for this week, I read The Four Tendencies by Gretchen Rubin, and it's one that I had on my hold list for a very, very long time. So I had to read through it really quickly because I knew I wasn't going to be able to renew it at the library. So Gretchen Rubin has written a lot about happiness and goal setting and having habits, like good habits, breaking bad habits, that sort of thing. She has a podcast called Happiness with Gretchen Rubin, and if you've ever listened to that, you've probably heard her talk about her four tendencies, which is kind of a personality framework that she just totally invented, but that actually fits most people really, really well. So the four tendencies are all about how you react to expectations. So there's two types of expectations. There are the internal expectations we place on ourselves. So saying things like, I wish I wrote more often, or I wish I painted more often, or pretty much all of our creative pursuits and our passions are internal expectations. And then there's external expectations, which are things like, I have to go to work or I will lose my job. And I have to cook my family dinner. And I signed up to host this church event and I have to do it now. It's a commitment I made. I can't back out. There's that play between internal and external expectations. And the four tendencies are as follows. So there are obligers. These are people who readily follow external expectations, but then they resist their inner ones. So they're the people who have trouble making time for their creative projects, even if they technically have time, because they feel obliged to fill all of their time doing things that other people want them to do. Then there are questioners. This is my type. And we follow our internal expectations and we resist external expectations. So, you can turn external expectations into inner goals, kind of, by saying, like, it's important to me that my family eats healthy, so I will cook them a good dinner because it's important to me, but I'm never going to do it just because they're hungry, I guess, which makes me sound like a terrible person. Or, like, I'll make you dinner, but it's going to be mac and cheese and corn dogs every single night, you know. Then there are upholders, who are the lucky few in the population who follow all expectations. So if they set a goal to exercise, they're going to meet it. If they say they'll do something for work, they'll do it. No problem. And then there are rebels who resist following any expectations at all, internal or external. And I don't totally understand how they get anything done.
No, that is a really good point. How do they get anything done? Based on your short description here, I'm going to go with I am an obliger, which is why this podcast gets made, because I feel like I have an expectation from you, Ashley, that I have committed to doing this podcast and is an external expectation. So it has to get done, which is probably why it's the only creative project I've ever followed through, because it's the only one dependent upon someone else.
And that's the key for most people are obligers, by the way. They're the biggest percentage of the population. And that's the key for obligers for meeting their goals or setting new habits or anything like that, is they need external accountability. And for some people, something as simple as like an email from your spouse to remind you to do something is good enough. But others of them need to have, like, somebody is there waiting for me and somebody is relying on me and I have to do this.
Can there be like a sliding scale? Because I feel like the only time I'll ever go to the gym if someone was there waiting for me. But like if Scott needs to remind me to feed the cats, I'll feed the cats.
Yeah, there definitely is. And in the book, Gretchen Rubin goes into how there's sort of a Venn diagram where some of the different tendencies sort of overlap with each other. So like me as a questioner, I overlap with upholders and rebels, and I'm the opposite of you as an obliger. Mm-hmm. So within every tendency, there's like sort of a spectrum where you tend one direction or the other. So you might be like an upholderish questioner where you're more likely to help people with other things. But if you're more of a rebel, you're more likely to be like, why would I help you do that? I've got my own things I want to do. Yeah. So it's not like a super scientific framework, but she did interview a lot of people and collect a lot of as many data points as she could. She's been doing this for years, and it just seems like it has so much application to people in the creative world who are always trying, it seems like they're always trying to find a way to justify spending time on their creative projects. And I think knowing which tendency you fall into can have a huge impact on how you structure your creative life in a way that your stuff actually gets done, the stuff that's important to you.
Yeah, that would be really helpful for a lot of us, I think, especially myself. So how would I turn an internal expectation into an external one? Is that just finding someone to hold me accountable?
Pretty much, yeah. The biggest thing that the book talks about for obligers is finding that external accountability. And she goes into a bunch of different ways that you can do that. You know, it could be even sending future you an email. Like, there's different, you know, websites where you can send your future self reminders and things like that. So there's different ways to do that. But yeah, really having those external, turning an internal goal into an external one. So for example, like if you wanted to do NaNoWriMo, publicly signing up for it and then creating your account and then sharing your word count every day would probably be pretty good accountability for you. And for me, I would just be like, why would I share my word count? I know if I wrote, and if I didn't feel like writing today, it's none of anybody else's business. Yeah, so I don't know. It's not super scientific, but
worth a read anyway.
It is. And there is a quiz that I can link to in the show notes where it's not a perfect quiz. You might still have to read the book to figure out, because in the quiz you can sort of cheat it one way or the other and be like, oh, in certain situations I would do this. So it's not perfect, but there is an online quiz I can link to for people who are interested in finding out which tendency they might be. Thanks for listening to the Chasing Creative podcast. If you like what you heard in this episode, be sure to stop by chasingcreative.com to check out the show notes, catch up on past episodes, and subscribe to the podcast.
If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you'd leave us a review on iTunes. You can also join in the creative conversation by tweeting to us at Abigail E. Krebs or at Brooks Editorial, or by using the hashtag ChasingCreative on Twitter and Instagram.
If you'd like to help us bring this podcast to life each week, find us on Patreon at patreon.com/chasingcreative.
And if you have any feedback for us, drop us a line at chasingcreativepodcast@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening. Until next week, go chase your creative.